and welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show,
a very distinctive podcast. I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle, and today we are talking about the walk in the woods job. I feel like Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, but walking in the woods seems like probably a bad idea.
Yeah, but this episode was really fun, so let's go talk about that. Hello and welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show,
a very distinctive podcast.
I am Yael Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle.
Yes.
Yes.
This is the Walk Into the Woods job written and directed by Mr. Noah Wiley.
Episode 5. I don't like how fast these are rolling by, but I'm loving them all.
This episode was incredible. This was a beautifully written, beautifully directed by Mr. Noah Wiley love letter to Elliot Spencer and his history.
Once we saw that picture, Elliot up there with Dr. Paul was like, this is it. This is it. I'm gonna like this. I'm gonna love this one. I like them all. I'm gonna love this one, though.
I felt like this episode could have gone so dark, right? The story of Dr. Paul and Curlander and this whole thing that happened and stealing Valor and all of that could have been so dark. But it took us to, I want to make sure I get this, Orpheus Grove. Orpheus Grove, the weirdest, wackiest, I'm saying, meetup of rich dudes in the woods.
It was like a cult and a white supremacist group had a baby, and that's the outfit inspiration.
I would say it's a cult and a white supremacist group and a frat.
Yeah, it was very fratty, right? It was like bros, like we're the bros, like, and the only women care around and are in servitude type of roles. I watched that. I said, oh, Yael is grinding her teeth at that. I know she is.
It was, again, this episode could have been so intense, and it was in such a different way. And I think that the Parker of this episode, her whole Parkerness, really like gave us that levity and allowed us to have
a little bit more fun, yeah.
In a place where it could be scary.
Well, yeah, because like I said, there in a previous episode, there's a level of realness in this show that it makes it believable, you know, even though it's like drama, right? Mm-hmm. And people getting together like that of certain type of the powers that be, right? Yeah. That happens. And that's what we're all pretty much petrified of, is the meetings that are happening behind our backs and they're going to control our lives.
The meeting happening in the woods.
And then it's like, you know, people watching this are probably like conspiracy theorists already. You know your audience, because I'm one. And I was like, they probably do meet. Is there three keys? How do you turn it into three?
It's not just three. It's three keys to open a safe in a tree.
We'll be asking questions. We got to know about more about this tree.
I got to know more about this tree. I think that this episode was so interesting. The way that it blended these elements, the way that it talked about bravery and about war and about freedom.
Being a good person who has to make a decision that you feel like is for the greater good, but really isn't based in the proper like ethics, that
yes.
ethical decision.
Yeah, it's such an interesting episode. And of course, also frogs and just so much weird.
I love that lady, man. I love that lady. When she said, I'm going to go hand out some flyers. Brown was like, flyers? What is that? And I didn't think like, oh, wow, like they might not. Well, I think Gen Z would know what flyer is. But like most people are not handing out flyers.
Right.
Right?
Right.
When's the last time I hand you a flyer?
You know, I will say flyers are now emails. And so the fact that Brianna knew to take this flyer and put it where people would see it.
Because it's a cause that a lot of people would care about. So I'm like, why is this woman just was in the wrong? She seemed to come forward in technology a little bit.
And luckily Brianna was there to help.
Yes. With I want that frog hat. The one she had on, like, the episode. I was like, I want that hat. That's kind of cool. Clearly, I like green, so.
Yeah. So let's talk about Dr. Paul and this history with Elliot. We know very little about Elliot's history. We know that he was in the military. We know that he has a lot of special training. We know that after the after the military, he then went and did freelance work that led him to darker things. Then we get to meet Dr. Paul, who really knew Elliot.
Yeah.
And I think that the
who
way
saved his life.
Saved his life. And the relationship that they have is so interesting and special because we've met people from Elliot's past before. And never somebody who I think there was so much respect between the two of them, you know?
Yeah.
And then to find out that Curlander is this person that they are familiar with.
This guy. That's what I have, like, the whole episode, I was like, this guy. Like, and I'm like, does anybody else not understand? Like, if you were hearing this, like, just without any context and the person was just talking this, I'd be like, oh, BS. I would totally call BS. My BS. Like, that's not, you're really going hard. Most people who, well, a lot of people have seen active combat. That's not, like, the first thing that they want to talk about with people because it's not a video game. Like, it's real life, and that's really scary, and it's really, like, impacts people's lives for the rest of their lives. Like,
there was the moment where he's telling the story, and I think it was Frick who says, like, not everyone wants to relive it. He's like, well, somebody asked. He's like, no.
No, he's like, I actually asked something else. I did not ask. Totally different.
No.
The edge of death is where a man feels most alive. Wouldn't you say, General?
I'm not as fond of talking about my time in combat as you are, Austin.
It's really interesting to see this because as a viewer, you go, then, nope, that's not right.
I don't think that's the same.
But there are people like that in this world that, you know, gloat and brag and take credit for things that they did not really do.
It was the, okay, so it was really like that cloak of like homogeny over this group, right? Like it's just a group of people, but literal cloak, a cyber cloak, and a one, you know,
yeah,
this covering of, okay, on the outside these are what these people do, but on the inside. And then when the guy was weird, he was like getting a massage. I was like, what weird stuff is going on here? Are you guys here to like meet and talk? Are you here to drink? He's like more pressure.
Yeah.
And Parker was like, bet. like, and just dug her elbow into his back and snatched that key off. I'm like, what are you guys doing there? Like, it just was weird. That the point was me feel uncomfortable about what these leaders are doing. That right. was definitely done.
They're all gathering to have a party, but also like a relaxation weekend, but also like, I guess like team bonding, but also like political conversations and negotiations and work things.
Things that probably should not happen in private.
That should not only not happen in private, should not be happening at a drinking retreat. That's not where you have those conversations. You know, those are the conversations you have in your office with a staff and somebody who takes notes. That's how you have that conversation.
I know, but the funniest part of this, or there's actually, there was more parts that were like comic relief. For me, it was him thinking that that Harry was Elliot.
Harry's Elliot was so good.
Didn't you hear the rumor? Oh my God, I know.
I've known a lot of cowards in my time. They aren't always who you think they are. Mostly they come loud and they come bragging, hiding behind title, rank, and privilege.
That was hilarious. Spot on.
No, wrote himself.
Like you didn't hear the rumors of the hair and the like. You know, I feel like if this guy is like really known, right? Like there would be like these tales about how he was like coming in, and I'm like, he was whipping his hair, he was kicking people, it was great, you know. And then, no offense, Harry, but I would not think that's the same. But he did a really good Elliot.
He did such a good Elliot. I love it. Reminded me of an episode from the original series where Sophie had to do or chose to do an Elliot-esque voice. And it just, Harry doing the voice was so good. Every time somebody is an Elliot, it's so funny.
I don't know if you're a hero, Curlander, but I know when I smell a coward.
Because that voice, be an Elliot.
What? No,
show
absolutely
me.
Not.
Do why, it.
What is, why do you like to put me on the spot? No.
You do it so good.
No, I don't. I've never done that. Do not do that. No. So Christian can come in here like, I heard you do. No, see, I almost did it. Nope. Nope.
So close.
Nope.
All right.
Nope. Physician, heal thyself. Worry about yourself.
Yes, ma'am. I really, really loved everything about this episode.
That was one of the lines I liked in there, too, because it's constantly on this journey of being a better version of yourself, right? Having self-awareness, being a journey of redemption. And even though Dr. Paul did a whole bunch of good, is a great guy. You know, allow a spy to think that you're dead and have a funeral for you. And also, like, lying about Valor is not good. And you have to come clean about that. You know, any successes that you have, like, it's kind of like that's the skeleton in the closet, mm-hmm. right? Or that, like, looming thing that's kind of over, that cloud that's over all these successes and all these great things that you know you did that. And it's, like, weighing on you. And if you're a guy who's in line with an Elliot Spencer, you really want to stand for something. You really want to be, like, it's not about being, like, the best person. It's about being, like, an authentic person. Mm. And that's not real. You know that you lied and you built everything on that, even though you did it for the right reasons. It probably helped a lot of people.
Right. And in his journey of helping people, Dr. Paul built this room with all he's got the maps and the conspiracy theory laid out, but he's also got the weapons. Let's talk about these weapons.
It was wild. It was like, I'm a doctor, but I ain't no punk.
I like Harry trying to take the nunchucks because I imagine Harry hurting himself.
That's a very hard weapon to use because you can just beat your own self up with it. Right. Like, you could just, like, oh my God, I meant to attack somebody else and I've assaulted myself. Like,
yeah. This episode was full of, like you said, it's so funny, which is so weird because it was also a very serious episode, but it was so funny. And I think that one of the funniest parts was,
oh my God,
it was the belly dancing.
That was the funniest. Okay.
What were you going to say?
Y'all, it's bad. It's so bad. If I say it, I'm going to get judged for it. But it was so funny to me. Well, when Brianna hit Sophie with the drug.
I think Sophie's response was amazing.
What? Yeah, because she was a G. She was like, oh, I'm a little rusty, but like.
Yeah, she like lay there. She's like, I got this. Wait for the mark to leave. All right, I can get up now. Yeah, there's a thing we do all the time.
Brianna really... That was not on purpose. That was not on purpose for her.
yeah, this episode just chock full of comedy, physical comedy.
It had to be because it was, like you said, it could have got really, really dark.
Yeah, I really love this episode. I think the thing we all need to remember is to not get drunk and piss on frogs. I think that's like really important.
And to turn down job opportunities because not every opportunity is opportunity for growth. Because remember, he said, I tried to hire you before and you didn't answer back because he knew you were a jerk.
Yep. Reminds me. Silverguard reminds me of RIZ.
You got a little Riz yeah. action.
A little Riz action. I feel like Silverguard, I mean, they're also a private security company, and I feel like there's definitely a place where it could have gone where we could have gotten another organization that we had to deal with. But we dealt with them, and we will not, hopefully not be seeing them again.
They were a great adversary, though. Yes. I'll say that. I enjoyed watching that in season one. The team moves forward, there will always be people like that are just on them because of their past. Like, so there's always room for more enemies. There's always plenty of room. We might see someone, another entity like that. You never know.
You never know. But there's also room for more behind the scenes exclusive stuff from Leverage Redemption, including we got to chat with the writer director of this episode, Mr. Noah Wiley. So let's check that out. So you got to write and direct this season. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I joined the writing staff this year, which was an interesting step in my education of how the sausage gets made. I wanted to see how you craft a season from the ground floor, and they were very generous in letting me have access, be part of it, and I was very gratified to find that I had an interesting voice and something to contribute after all these years of working with scripts. And I came in with a concept for an episode that I thought would be fun, and they let me run with it, so it was my first time going to work with my name on the call sheet in three different places, which was kind of cool.
So you wrote, directed, and starred in an episode.
Well, I think Christian's the star of the episode. I wrote him kind of a love letter episode, but I'm right there by his side most steps of the way.
We got some fan questions. They want to know what it's like to direct yourself. And I want to know what it's like to direct and write yourself.
Directing myself is not as hard as you think it would be. I think I've been doing it long enough that I kind of have an internal metronome of when I'm in the zone of where I want to be. I also have a lot of trust in Gary Camp, our camera operator, Dave Connell, our DP. I very much like Kim Berner, our script supervisor. All of them have exceptional taste and will give me a little bit of a high sign if they think I should try something else. Writing for myself was trickier because I found that I was very self-conscious about how the other cast would feel about me writing. And so I wanted to make sure that I was writing myself as the butt of the joke and not the hero, and that I was coming in from a place of humility and a place of trying to elevate all their characters and let each one of them do something that we know and love their characters for. I wanted Parker to really get to be Parker and Sophie to really get to be Sophie and Elliot to be Elliot. Sadly, we didn't have Hardison in that episode, but Elise. I thought everybody got a nice little something great to play, and they all seemed to feel the same.
So in season one, there was an opportunity for everybody to kind of ad-lib and ask their question when everyone was making fun of Elliot Spencer and Maria Shipp getting together. When you were writing your episode, did you leave space for that kind of improvisation?
No. In fact, I remember the first script I wrote was for the librarians. And after, I don't know, 30 years of being an actor and taking the script and, you know, getting the gist of it, found myself going, actually, I don't think that you're saying that whole line right. There's actually kind of a rhythm to this. And I got very kind of dictatorial about my words because they were my words for the first time. So this time, I didn't leave room for improvisation, but I definitely left room for malleability. I wanted everybody to feel like they could make it their own and have a sense of ownership in it without feeling like I was holding onto the reins too tight. So I left room for that without writing towards it, if that makes sense.
So Harry's been the butt of the joke all through season one. Is he still going to be called the evil lawyer this year?
Well, he's no longer an evil lawyer, but he certainly can remember when he was, and he adds that perspective to it. You know, I worked for a guy once in a restaurant who told me, because I wasn't so into being a waiter, you know, that there's great nobility and humility, that just because you're in a serving capacity doesn't make you subservient. In fact, if you think of this as putting on a show for the people who are coming in here to give them a really wonderful experience, there's nothing hierarchical about that at all. And for some reason, that really made sense to me. So even if I'm the butt of the joke, I don't see it as a degrading place to be. I think it's almost a very powerful position to be in the scene. It doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I don't even think it diminishes the character. I think it makes it more endearing in a weird way. So it's a little bit of a Jedi mind trick. The rest of the cast think they're firing on Harry, but actually America's falling in love with him.
Y'all got to have a great interview with writer Josh Scherer. Check it out.
You've written on the show in the original and now on the reboot. And this season we got Noah in the writing room. Tell me what that was like from your perspective.
Well, I'd never met Noah because we weren't on set for season one of the show because of the pandemic. And this was really an opportunity to, you know, to get to know him. He is incredibly bright. I would say this if we weren't being filmed. He was honestly like such a welcome addition, so well prepared, so flexible, which is for me the hallmark of any professional TV writer, you know, the ability to go with the flow. He had great ideas. He's incredibly literate in terms of not only books but film and TV. And he's also a director, which is it makes him incredibly qualified to sit in a writer's room because we don't have many people that have directed anything beyond shorts or independent productions. So him bringing a director's eye in and him obviously bringing an incredibly accomplished actor's eye in was very helpful. But just working with him day to day was a fantastic experience. He brought in a great energy. Sometimes he would, you know, play the parts in voice. Sometimes we found him taking pot shots at the other characters. Sometimes we found him writing for his own character, which was like, this really isn't fair. The other actors don't get to do this. But for the, you know, I joke, but like, he was such a breath of fresh air, and I was not surprised, but we loved having him. When he was done with his episode, he came back and just stuck around and helped everybody else out. Pretty sure we weren't paying him, but he just loved being there, and we loved having him. So it was great.
It's so funny that you talk about that, because you got to write him in the One Man Trash Job to play a very specific character. Did you write that the character that Harry plays before or after meeting Noah?
It was definitely after meeting him. I feel like we broke. I'm pretty sure I wrote that. Yeah, I mean, I would have definitely written the character after meeting him. May have conceived it before meeting him, but that character did not take shape until it was actually on the page. In the outline, it was, you know, we did not talk much about him. We certainly didn't color him in any way. And between what I wrote on the page for the character and what Noah did on on camera, which was really him and the director, Mark Roskin, having conversations about Harry leaning in further into playing characters, playing roles in the cons. And, you know, he made a meal out of it. It was such a fun character. It was a touch of Pete Postlewaite in Usual Suspects and a touch of Noah being Noah. And it was delightful. We always joked about almost every character he did this season could have its own spinoff. And that was, it seemed like a goal of his to color in all of his characters with that level of depth and clarity.
Ooh, I have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
The fans have questions. We all have questions.
Well, you have questions and the cast has answers. So stick right here and check out their answers. All right, now, if you could invite any celebrity to be a guest star on Leverage Redemption, who would it be and why?
I don't know. I think I have to bring JoJo Siwa for obvious reasons, but I think she's just dope energy. And then I probably just have to bring Rihanna because I want to see Rihanna.
My happy space, my absolute sweet spot, I'm sure all the fans know, is when I'm doing comedy. And my absolute hero comedian is Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So if I had a chance of ever doing a scene with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I would just die and go to heaven, like, happy, because she's my complete hero.
It would have to be George Clooney. George Clooney. I got the same history with Noah that I do with George, which is I was on ER back when I was like 12. Actually, the first time I was on ER, I played a little kid that was, I believe, dying from leukemia, and Noah came in to save me. I remember when I was there, 12, and I saw on the lot, George was outside playing basketball on the studio lot. That's what they do, you know? But that's where I first met both of those guys. And this feels a little full circle because Noah's here in his capacity as Harry, but also my character, the satellite that I'm all doing, the secret client that I work with, that's George's satellite. So in the storyline, we have it as that it being George Clooney's satellite that he owns to help decriminalize the world. So I think that would be awesome to have George Clooney on to play himself in that capacity.
I mean, I sure would love to do something with Anthony Hopkins. If I get to shoot for the stars, I mean, it would be Anthony Hopkins, because I think he'd just be, I don't even know if he would be the villain or if he'd be the good guy. Either way, he's going to win. And that would be so much fun to see that. I mean, he's got the chops for it. But I think we both agree that, I think me and Gina would probably say together, I think Rowan Atkinson would be the best, yeah. Right? Because you don't know if he's a spy, he's played both, but just with his comedy thing, we both love comedy. And we were talking about Mr. Bean the other day. And it'd just be so much fun to have him on the show, because you never know what you're going to get.
Let's keep taking a stroll for this walk in the woods job with writer and director of this episode, Mr. Noah Wiley.
If you hated this one, it's my fault. I take 100% of the blame on this one.
This was such a great episode. It was so fun. And we got all this backstory.
Thank you very much. This was an extremely gratifying episode for me. Because it's the first time in my career that I've been able to see an episode of television go from the very beginning stages all the way to the very end and see the whole process from start to finish. It was incredibly gratifying to get a front row seat in the writer room and to see how a season of television gets constructed and how Kate and John and Chris and Dean and all those amazingly talented people do incredible amounts of research and then take these very complex stories and have to fit them into a very specific box is an incredible discipline. I learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, this episode gives us a whole peek into Elliot's life and his backstory, but it also gives us this whole other story about these dudes in the woods with their robes. Okay. Where did you start this one? Did you start with, I want to write Elliot's story?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I came in with wanting to do an Elliot story, and I wanted to do something that was tied to his past, and I wanted to do something that that showed a vulnerable side of him by giving him a confidant that was outside of our group that he had a connection with. And my initial impulse was to do kind of a long goodbye storyline where his friend is tragically killed in the beginning, and then we realize his friend has actually set up Elliot to do his dirty work for him, and his friend faked his own death. So I was working with that kind of a template. And the other side of the storyline, I started down a whole psilocybin research sort of line and then completely pivoted when somebody brought up this group called... I think Pacific Grove it's called in California, which is a very old standing campground where politicians and statesmen and judges and, you know, captains of industry gather and congregate and cross-pollinate ideas. And it's been a source of conspiracy theories over the years about this being some kind of New World Order nexus. And I love the idea of playing with that in the context of doing a kind of... private security company run amok storyline, and that the private security company run amok storyline would be the serious side of things, and then the men's camp would be more of the comedic side of things. And then I just started tickling my funny bone, and I just didn't stop, and then nobody stopped me, and then it just got out of hand.
It did get out of hand. I'm gonna be honest, you've got these dudes in the robes, they're drunk, they're peeing on stuff.
Oh yes. Well, that's true. You know, one of the things that I read about Pacific Grove is that they have these brass plaques all over the campground telling people where they shouldn't urinate. And the inference is that you can urinate anywhere else except where they've designated on a plaque. And I just thought that was hilarious. And the idea of tying the fact that these guys think agency, you know, means being away from women and being able to pee wherever they want, having that urine be somehow detrimental to the environment and pulling the rug out from underneath them was my little ta-da magic trick.
What a weird story.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you very specifically about this tree that has a safe in it.
Yeah.
Where did the concept of...
I'll tell you exactly where that came from. This is what it's like. You're in the writer room and you're banging stuff out all day long. And then you're like, oh, John Rogers is coming in today. Oh, John's coming in today. Oh, that'll be fun. John's coming in. And John comes and goes, hey, everybody. Oh, I like this. You know, I always wanted to put a safe in a tree. Can we do that? Anyway, you guys are great. I'll see you later. And he leaves. And then he go, so do we really have to do that? Because he said so? Do we have to put a safe in the tree? Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Well, how the hell are we going to do that? So that was John Rogers' contribution. That then we all scratched our heads around for a good long while. But damn it, we got it. It's in the tree.
Amazing. I was like watching and being like, what a weird idea.
It takes a village.
I love that. So we also have this really great, you know, this episode, I think you told us when we were on set that this was a love letter to Elliot and a love letter to Christian. But in that love letter, we have Harry playing Elliot.
Lovingly.
Uh-huh. Is that what you want to call that?
As homage-ly as possible. Yeah, this was, This was a love letter to Elliot all the way around. And it was, Harry occasionally has hero envy and looks at Elliot as being a kind of, there, but for the grace of God, I wish I could, wish I could. And then suddenly I have an opportunity to impersonate him. So I went with it. That was the little nugget. I wrote everybody a really solid part. I was like, this is going to be a good show for Gina and Beth. I got really fun stuff for you. And Christian, you're going to get taken care of. At least you get this whole side thing. I'm going to give myself one little nugget, though. So I gave myself that.
All right. And how did Christian take it?
When he comes in, he goes, what was that voice you're doing? It's my favorite line in the whole show. He took it on the chin.
I also love that we have this. There's like an emotional story in there as well for Elliot and for Harry, and talking about bravery. And that was just so beautiful layered into there.
Christian was very sweet, and he told me that that speech was one of the nicest things that he's ever had an opportunity to say, and that meant a lot to me. His character is really heroic. And bravery is often misconstrued as being something that it isn't. And courage is often mistaken for something that it isn't. And I wanted to draw the distinction between what men of action feel as heroism and what civilians watching men of action think of as heroism. And I wanted the inside perspective to be, it's not about braggadocio and it's not about accolades or medals or rewards. It's about service and it's about intention and it's about honor. And those aren't things you trumpet. Those are things that maybe are trumpeted about you, but you've already moved on and have already left that party when that happens, hopefully. And I love that is what Elliot's ethos is. And it was a nice moment for them to share. And it comes about, it's Elliot's gift back to Harry for Harry joining him on the journey to go and do this very difficult thing. So the gift to Harry is to say, there's more to you than you're giving yourself credit for.
Yeah, it feels like it's the first time, we've heard Christian talk a lot about how Elliot is a bad guy, is never going to be redeemed. And so it's the first time that Elliot considers healing a little.
Yeah.
It's just such a tiny nugget of maybe I'm not the worst. And that's so
beautiful.
I think
that's true. Yeah. Well, this show is about redemption, and this show, not your after this
leverage
this
redemption.
The show that came before this is about redemption.
Okay,
less than we talked about this last season, maybe less than it was the first time around, and redemption for all of our characters is part of that, not just Harry or our clients.
Yeah. Is there anything from this episode that you wrote into or directed particularly that you want to make sure the fans noticed or caught or that you really enjoyed?
I came into it thinking I'm going to get teased a lot because my name's all over this call sheet, and rightly so, because I'm putting my neck on the chopping line and I've got to be able to take it. But I came into it with the intention of wanting everybody to feel like it's your episode. I wrote it for you, and I want you to bring your ideas and creativity to it so that we come out the end of that end of the week feeling like we did something really fun. And I think that it was what was most fun for me, is watching everybody enjoy what I'd helped create for them, but then add so much more of their own brilliance on top of it. And that came from actors, certainly, but also the production team, the design team, at props, everybody stepped up. If I said, I want some like a ram's horn for this guy to blow, man, if that ram's horn didn't show up exactly the way I pictured it.
Wow. I mean, we also have Parker's, her con of her theft of the episode, and her as the belly dancer.
That was so fun. She was so game that day. It's really, it's 7 o'clock in the morning and you got a belly dance in front of 50 dudes who are all wearing white sheets and making moose horns and making moose calls at you. And God, she's just such a wonderfully game, willing, brave, inventive performer. And I asked for 8, she gave 12. It's all in there.
Amazing.
I want to know, what was your first impression of Noah as a writer?
Noah's just a really smart, like, multifaceted artist. He is clever. He's very detail-oriented and still has a way of being light about it that I really appreciate. Like, when Brianna becomes impassioned by the frogs and the causes of the frogs and stuff like that, it's just a... It was just a clever script. And then he does these things with the cloaks and the, what were they, what were the caftans, you know what I mean? He's just, I really enjoy his sense of humor while it's still being, you know, smart and clean.
Really, one thing I know the fans really love is how much you guys really root for each other, support each other in, you know, different artistic ventures. And one of those is Noah writing. He wrote a script. So talk to me about Noah's script and how that was to get to act that script out and that experience.
This episode that Noah Wiley wrote was actually quite serious, and it really kind of focused on me a little bit more than everybody else. And the great thing was, is I've worked with Noah for so long. We did 4 years of the librarians together and became really great friends. And, you know, I go out to Noah's house. We, you know, we have wine. We cook together. Yeah, exactly. And it's so much fun. And so he knew the words to write for me. And when we got done and we wrapped, and I said, thank you for that. And he's directed us before. He's directed me more times than you know, he directed all of ours. And I said, thank you for that. And he was like, it was easy. I said, no, it wasn't. You actually wrote words for me. You know, sometimes we're not able to sit with the writers and do all this other kind of stuff. And they write words. And sometimes we have to change it to us and also our character. And I didn't have to do any of that. And it was such a sensitive matter for me that I really enjoyed working on that episode, man. And he also wrote and directed it. And so, you know... It was kind of, sometimes that could be a nightmare because it's like, I wrote this and I'm shooting it this way. And he wasn't like that. And I thought it was really great. And that was one of my favorite episodes of the season. And I think everybody is going to love it.
Yeah, I think it's really important as well, because it's not easy to walk into a show where, like last season, like he and Elise did, where we're so established. The fact that he wrote so confidently, and he wrote a really perfect leverage script. We always talk about, oh, that's an old school script. And the script that he wrote actually is a real compliment to our archive too. And I told him that when I read it. We celebrate each other, Beth directing, Noah directing.
I was going to bring up Beth as well. It's like, you know,
yeah, and him bringing writing in is just another thing to celebrate, and another way of bonding, and another way of like enjoying this experience, this leverage world that we live in.
Felicia, you actually lived in Louisiana, right?
I did live in the boot, and I can say with certainty that there's no other place in the world like the city of New Orleans. I mean, it's the background of Leverage Redemption, because there's only one New Orleans, just like there's only one Leverage team.
We're shooting this season of Leverage Redemption in New Orleans.
I really enjoy this city, but the beignets, if you've ever been down here, you've had a beignet, and they are trapping me. Because I cannot, as soon as I got off the airplane, I got a beignet. You know, the city has such great food, obviously such great vibes, great music, great life, but great people. The thing that I love about the city primarily is just the people, the warmth. I'm from the South originally, so there's a sort of a kinship there. But
well, this is my third time shooting in New Orleans, and people have asked me before, what is the best thing about shooting in New Orleans? And some people say, oh, the jazz, or the restaurants, or the architecture, or the history. And all of that is true, but it's not the best thing. The best thing about shooting in New Orleans are the people who live here. These people are so warm and gracious and caring that it just makes the experience completely unique. And I recommend to anyone, if you've not been to New Orleans, you want to come down and check it out.
Well, this show is based in New Orleans now. And so New Orleans is a character in this show. So locations is a huge part of the fabric of this show now. We want this to feel like New Orleans, but not the kind of New Orleans that you would see on a travelogue. We want it to feel like a New Orleans that a New Orleanian would relate to.
The locations for the show in New Orleans have been wonderful. I think one of the great things about the city is it is America's most European looking city. So it has played, among other things, this season, Panama. It's played the south of France. So it's been, I think all the locations we've shot at have been wonderful and gave the show a look that it never had before in the other cities we shot at.
I can't express how much New Orleans affects the overall. I'm a consumer of television, movies, and I love a sense of place. And so I try to put that in my work. And New Orleans has so much texture and flavor and authenticity. It's pretty easy to get lost in it as a designer.
Additionally, we need New Orleans to sometimes look like Paris, France, or we need locations that couldn't be less looking like New Orleans. And that's really where the location department comes in handy, is they find you both the micro and the macro. They find you the big open field that you could say is English countryside, or they take you to the perfect back alley that just says French Quarter.
There's a nature to it, to how people treat you and how people greet you, that is just so inviting and unforgettable, which makes this a great place to work.
Hi there, my name is Mia Goff. I'm the makeup department head for Leverage Redemption. I actually started with the original Leverage season 5. I got hired to do makeup for Gina and Beth, who play Parker and Sophie. And I did the whole season, and it was how everything started. And when the series moved to New Orleans, I lived here, and that's how I got invited. I have 3 people on my full-time team, and then we add manpower as the series gets cranking and more crazy by every episode. So we have up to 10 people per episode working for us, and we all have a great time. Well, we have the benefit of knowing these characters for a few years, so we've developed sort of a classic signature look for each of the characters, so we know who they are. Where the fun comes in when we go into the cons and really start changing their look and designing according to kind of the feel of the character, and that's when we really get to play and have fun. Whenever, as an artist, whenever we get to stretch our imagination and really take the makeup as far as we possibly can, that's always fun. We tell a lot of stories with facial hair and changing their facial characteristics, colors. For example, in the first season of Leverage Redemption, Noah's character wasn't quite sure what his place was in the team, and he was trying to sort of fit in, and we communicated that through some facial hair that was intentionally sometimes a little goofy looking because he didn't quite know how to get into a con, so we had some mishaps with facial hair, and it was a little over the top. So those moments are always fun. Rolling on the River job was a really, really fun con for Beth. She got to play a Southern Belle. She's usually pretty restrained in her minimalist look, so we don't get to play with a lot of glitter and color, but this is where we went all out. The hair department did an amazing job with some extensions and ponytails, and she was sassy and frassy, and we went from full-on glamour with full glitter and her jumping into the river, being sopping wet, and back to Parker. So that was a fun, fun job for us. It's a really collaborative effort. I love our hair department head, Allie Vickers, who can't be with us today, but she does a phenomenal job working with the different wigs and extensions and adding different dimensions into the overall design. We talk about our design concept often, and she's a really key collaborator in the overall looks. Leverage has a huge, tight pace. We are filming an episode every 8 filming days, so when we're approaching our design work, we have to really take into consideration that their con looks can't always veer that far from what we're doing with their signature looks. So whenever we have a character or a con that plays just for a short period of time, or we film it in a day, that's our opportunity to really stretch it and really go nuts with color and glitter and different characters.
We asked you to caption some photos on Instagram, and here are some of our favorites. Check it out.
Ribbit, Ribbit, thanks for watching. While you're busy worrying about saving the frogs, and you should care about that, you should also care about all the amazing behind the scenes that we got this season 2. We really put in that work for you guys. You're going to love it. We asked all the questions, I promise. Also, if you want to watch more Leverage Redemption After Show with us, or if you want to watch some of our specials, that's available right now on Electric Now.
And of course, you can join the conversation on social media at After Leverage. We are asking for fan art, as always, and commentary, your predictions, your questions for the cast, all of that. Until next time.
Yes.
I'm Yael Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle Ribbitt. And this has been a very distinctive podcast.